Nate Golic, thank you so much for being on the Hospitality MD podcast. I'm so glad to have you on the show today. How are you, my friend?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, my friend. So you have a very unique set of circumstances here. You know, as we all know, for those listening, that the hotel industry has been battered pretty heavily by the coronavirus pandemic. And, you know, I certainly don't want to beat a dead horse, right? Because we know what the effects have been. And with that in mind, I want to take the opportunity this episode and with Nate to talk a little bit about the positive things that can come from it. For most of us, myself included, Nate included, our jobs were eliminated as a result of the pandemic. So for those who may be in limbo right now, there's still hope for you, whether it's inside a hotel or not. There's still opportunities out there to be hospitable and to serve the industry, even if you're not working inside a hotel every day. So with that in mind, I'm happy to have Nate Golic on the show. Nate, you've been in hotels for many, many years, and most recently our special project manager with ResNexus. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background so we can get a feel for who you are.
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle. I had a pretty interesting 2020, as I'm sure everybody has. But kind of what the road that led me to ResNexus is I've got about 8 years of experience in hospitality, working in front desk, housekeeping, front office manager. I was a guest services manager at a large resort. And so I've always kind of worked in hotels. I've done some events, banquet captain and things like that, as I've kind of bounced around and really enjoyed just the ebbs and flows of the hospitality industry. Eventually, I wanted to get some new build experience so I could eventually become a regional manager. As you probably know, you need to kind of have new build experience if you want to be a regional manager so that you can, because you'll likely open up a new property at some point. So I was living in Central Oregon, and me and my wife were looking for a change. And so we had an opportunity to move to Utah, and there was a new build Hampton Inn and Suites that was opening up in Spanish Fork, Utah. So I moved me, my wife, and our two dogs out here. And this is my first opportunity as a general manager. So I was really excited about that. I was very hungry. I wanted to hit the ground running, and I was excited to work, you know, 19-hour days and all this, and try to prove myself. And it was all for naught, to say the least. So I moved here in November as the building was still under construction. We had drywall up, and that was about it. So we moved in beds, and we moved in PTACs, and I started hiring staff. And it was really cool to kind of see that opportunity come to life as I built the team that I wanted. Because, of course, you know, working in middle management, you always have those questions. Oh, you know, I would have done this differently, or I would have done that differently. So I had all these notes that I had taken prior, just mental notes that I wanted to apply to my own property. And I fully intended to be there for, you know, months and years to get the property running and, you know, seek other opportunities after a couple of years. So anyway, so I moved here in November, and then we opened the property February 19th. And then by March, things were looking really bad, of course, and severe cutbacks. So our regional manager kind of had me start cutting hours, and we were doing layoffs and everything. And it was one of those scenarios where after I had laid everybody else off, just about 2/3 of the property, then she came and she said, yep, we're going to have to cut back even further. And I had no qualms with the situation. I understood that this was a very difficult decision for them to come to. But by April 1st, I had also been laid off, and our sister property was another Hampton. They had that general manager who has more experience than I did. She was going to manage both properties and split her time. And I believe she's still doing that.
I've heard so many stories about management companies complexing, you know, with their hotels and kind of really taking the skeleton crew to another level and having them run multiple hotels. So I certainly understand that you're not alone, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate. Nate, the one thing that I found interesting that I totally 100% relate to, as I'm sure many of our listeners do, is, you know, you mentioned the sentiment of when you were in middle management, I wish I could do things that way, or if I was only the GM, I would do this. Tell me about like your optimism going into this property and what you had in mind, like what your ambitions were to do things your way. Do you remember any of that? I know it's probably been a while, but.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually was reminded of something that I wanted to do by another one of your podcasts. I was listening to that podcast back in December of Craig Poole, and he talked about integrating with the community and really helping the community, but he also talked about his financial initiatives with the staff and financial education. I can't remember what he called it, but I had this idea.
Financial literacy courses.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So his was far more intense than mine was. His was far more well thought out. But what I did is I did Finance Fridays. So what we started doing is, you take typically a class of people that are working in hotels is typically entry level, typically lower wage, right? Lower skilled. Sometimes, they're from out of the country. So you have a big immigrant community and everything. And even if you are from the country, if you are from the United States, there's so many of us that don't have a clue on how to handle money, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't do a good job of teaching it in schools or in college or anything. And so the thing that we had started doing was on Fridays at lunch is I would pull out my laptop and I'd bring it into the break room. And we would just watch videos from Bank of America has some really great resources and Wells Fargo. And they have these like 10, 20 minute videos about how to increase your credit score and how to make a budget and how to, properly manage money. And I thought it was super insightful. And I learned, several things from it, how to invest in stocks, So it was really cool that I was able to kind of do that. And of course, people really enjoyed it. And there were those that, it wasn't for me, or maybe it was over my head, or I didn't really care for it. And those people would either sit quietly in the lunchroom or they just wouldn't join us for lunch on those Fridays. And so just about every Friday we started, we set out the laptop and people would gather around and then we'd have a short discussion afterwards, or if they had other questions, or make them think about something that they'd then look up themselves. And a lot of these people had never seen it as an option, that, and then the other thing that I really enjoyed doing is I had what I like to call a survival guide. So from inception, I really wanted to instill documentation and organization, because you've worked in those offices at hotels or wherever that you get there and you're like, oh, this is the way it's always been done. This is where this thing has always been saved or whatever. And it's just, it's too clunky and disorganized. And so I really made sure that we had somebody at the front desk that had office experience. She had one of our key gals that worked in the morning from 7 to 3 shift during the week. She was very organized. And so I made sure that all of our documents, this is probably way too specific and anal, but I had her make sure that in the footer, she saved the file path for all of the documents that we had and the dates that it was updated and things like that. Just to be ultra organized. And then we had the survival guide, and every time there was a question, it went into the survival guide. So when do our doors automatically lock, the exterior doors, when do they automatically lock for the front door? Okay. Put that time in there. Do we have any, sweetheart deals with local businesses or whatever, we offer corporate rates or discounts or anything like that, that might not necessarily show up in the system just yet. Okay. Document it here. So we had this survival guide where all the answers would be. So if there was a question about something, eventually we wanted this document to be, they would come to me and they would find out the answer. But her kind of job was making sure that everything was put in there. So, AAA standards for 4-diamond and 5-diamond, what a great check-in looks like. Phone etiquette. We put that in there because, again, oftentimes you have, especially in this rural community, we have people, this was the first hotel in this town. So there was a Quality Inn and then there was this property. So, and it was far larger than the, I think it was a 30 room Quality Inn. So it was one of the biggest first hotels to this town. So we have a lot of people that had no hospitality experience whatsoever. They don't know how to answer the phone. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to do a check-in, anything like that. So we had this resource guide that ended up being, 60 pages of where are the water shutoffs? How do you handle it when a fire alarm goes off? All of these things. Because what I always experienced when I was in middle management is I'd get that call at 2 a.m, right, from the night auditor saying, hey, I've got X issue, whatever it is, right? And so over the course of a year, or when you were able to document everything as much as possible, and they should reference that first. As long as it's organized and easy to find, you know, they should be referencing that first. Oh, I still don't know the answer. Now I'll call the general manager. So that was my way to try to, I guess, have some work-life balance so I wouldn't be woken up at 2 a.m. But I really enjoyed doing that.
Well, that's awesome, Nate. Like that, I mean, and that addresses a lot of the problems that, you know, both you and I, and I'm sure many others have experienced in the hotels. I mean, you know, for many of our podcast listeners, they know that I used to work at the Drake in Chicago, which is 100 years old. So when I first got there and I went to the shared drive for the computers and was just looking for SOPs and just documents and beginning to explore the shared drive, I was like, holy shit, what is this?
Yeah.
It was completely disorganized. There were, you know, no rhyme or reason to where the files were. And unfortunately, after, you know, not 100 years, obviously, with computers, but after essentially many decades of just building this up, it was almost too much to go back and try to sort through, especially when you have the day-to-day operations that are kind of burdening on you on a daily basis. So getting that off to the right foot, I'm sure went a long way for all the team members at your property. Certainly another
I would thing. Also have, like, in that survival guide, I would have the new front desk agents read it. Not all the stuff on there was super relevant to like housekeepers or anything, but if I hired a new front desk agent, I would have their schedule that they would be working for the next 2 weeks kind of printed on this at the beginning of this folder, right? So I print this thing out. I had a table of contents on it, right? And then in there, I would have their schedule, and then they would review their schedule for the week and then start reading this. So then they would apply it. So I'd say, okay, this is how to do a proper check-in. Click here, click here, click here. And then have it all detailed up. This is how to set up an online travel agent right in our system. Click here, click here. And then they would go through and actually do it. But then they had like a step-by-step walkthrough of everything on there. And it had this like welcome letter to them and kind of what our policies were on, you know, if you have concerns with other employees or if you need to change schedules or anything like that, and kind of how I wanted to handle things. So they got a really good sense of my operational style and my open door policy right from the get-go, even though I knew I'd be pulled in so many different directions. Because I was the general manager also, as well as the director of sales, and the only other elevated staff member that we had was an executive housekeeper, and that's it. So I was getting pulled in a lot of different directions.
Wow. That's a lot for one person to deal with, especially to open a brand new property. But I'm sure the time invested in getting that survival guide going saved you a lot of, you know, you mentioned you're pulling in different directions, right? A lot of times that you could have gotten pulled away that they were able to look in those archives and find something without, you know, kind of getting you involved. I'm also getting a sense of this kind of full circle type of, you know, thing with you here, which about your blog posts and your archives that you have with ResNexus to help the property owners and operators that you deal with on a daily basis at ResNexus. It seems like it's kind of a little mini survival guide type thing with your own opinion kind of mixed in there. Is there any relation there?
Oh, of course. Yeah. So the survival guide, I guess, was kind of my idea that I started when I was working as a guest services manager at a large golf resort. And so then over time, you know, I built something like a really neat schedule that would do some labor tracking tools and things like that. And so, of course, I'd carry that to the next property. So I went from, you know, one to the next, and then I would continue to iterate on the documents that I had kind of built and apply, you know, a lot of the same best practices. So then, so I got laid off, right, to kind of get to how I got to ResNexus. I was laid off at the Hampton, unemployed for about 2 months. And then I, you know, was still applying and trying to get another job. And I actually got four job offers within the same week. So leading up to the end of May, so leading up to June. So, and they were in hotels. So I had an assistant general manager position that I was offered. So I would be kind of taking a step back and go back to an AGM role. But it was similar pay. It was in a little bit busier area and it would be further away. I also got a general manager position that I was offered, but it was about 3 hours away. So I'd have to pick up and move yet again. So I'd have to say that I failed in Central Utah, only being here for about 5 months and then move on. And then I was like, you know what? I want to start my own business. You know, like I think I could do something online or maybe consulting, you know, again, a lot of the same entrepreneurial spirit that I'm sure that you have. And so I said, you know what? I need to figure this out. I was talking to a guy and he introduced me to our now mutual friend, who is James Mayfield, now my boss. And so I pitched the idea to James. And James was like, you know what? I think it's a great idea. I don't want to do it, but you seem bright. I think you can apply yourself. Come work for me for a little bit because we need help with our B&B. So they provide PMS software, booking engines, websites to bed and breakfast, campgrounds, small motels, and those. They have a huge amount of properties here in the United States. Vast majority of them are 5 rooms and under, right? They have some that are 15, 20 rooms. I think they have like over 3,000 properties, right? And so now what I do on a daily basis is I'll do research or I'll write about my personal experience about proper phone etiquette, like I said, or how to deal with OTAs and marketing channels, search engine optimization, how to show up on Google, basically, right? And then all these other kind of operational things that I, of course, used to do on a daily basis, what you're looking for when you're hiring a housekeeper versus what you're looking for when you're hiring a front desk agent. And I write about all those articles on ResNexus.com under kind of a blog name as Suite Exchange, S-U-I-T-E Exchange. Yeah.
So I obviously want to really dive into that, but before we do, for our listeners who are dying to know, what was your business idea that you pitched to James Mayfield?
It was kind of an OTA. What I basically wanted to do is I saw this need for that hotels are pushing against online travel agents and other marketing channels. And so there was this like kind of book direct initiative. And I also saw this necessity for the natural travel cycle. So there's dreaming, planning, booking, experiencing, and then sharing. Those 5 steps: dreaming, planning, booking, experiencing, then sharing. So everybody, when they travel, they kind of go through that same cycle, right? So they dream about where they want to go. I want to go on this cruise ship, or I want to go down to Cancun, or whatever. I want to go golfing in Scottsdale. And then planning, they start searching and looking and everything. And then, of course, they go to book, and then they share that experience. Well, there's
Nate,
no
Nate, yeah. You actually froze there for a minute, so I want to make sure that we got that. So right after you said the 5-cycle, the travel cycle, that was the last thing I heard from you. So I know it's hard to get back into that role, but
no worries. Yeah. So the dreaming, planning, booking, experiencing, and sharing cycle. So there, I don't think there's a good platform that takes advantage of every step of that cycle. So everybody has Facebook and Instagram, and a lot of people really enjoy Instagram and Pinterest for sharing like travel stories, right? Little snippets of influencers that are traveling all over the place, right? But you can't book on Instagram, right? So it was kind of this amalgamation of Expedia meets Facebook kind of thing. So it was a social platform where people could go see their friends' travel experience. And you also have this issue where a lot of the social media platforms, in my view, I think are going to continue to be more diversified. We have new software and new social media platforms like TikTok that have recently come out. But you also have ones that are more like upvotes, like Reddit. And then you have Facebook, you have Twitter, you have all these things. And the reason why they're so profitable is because they can appeal to the masses, but they don't have a niche, right? So what, in my opinion, when I think a lot of the large social media platforms have done wrong is they haven't defined their niche. So then they get into this politically charged atmosphere that we now find ourselves in, and they get the rabbit hole effect, right? Where people are really frustrated and upset because you Google, you know, QAnon, that's in the news a lot lately, or whatever, and then you go down this rabbit hole because the algorithm is designed to keep you engaged. But I don't see a possible universe where there's any threat to continuing to view travel and other things that are associated with travel on social media. Everybody loves to make their friends jealous about how they went down to, you know, the golf course in Scottsdale for a weekend or this or that or whatever. And everybody shares those. And it's not a negative, you know, it's not this polarizing force that we see so often. So I was thinking of ways to try to solve that problem, have a booking experience married with a social media platform.
You know, I got to be honest with you, I really like the idea because another thing too is like, you know, your travel bloggers and social media influencers who travel and then share it, right, with Instagram and which is a big one, right, and all these other platforms, the organic reach is slowly but surely declining. So people who are just starting out, it's difficult for them because, you know, when you don't have a million followers, it's hard for people to see your posts organically. So with a new network like this, the organic reach would be huge. It would be a great way to connect people who love to travel. And then, you know, I feel like it could be monetized pretty easily too, because if you stay at the Arizona Biltmore, for example, then you maybe the hotel would sponsor your advertisement for that particular stay, and then you could book directly from there. I think it's a great idea.
I'll have to tell you more details when we're not recording. I have like a fully fleshed out like 42-page business plan, and it would work really well in COVID, right? Because there's fewer people traveling. You know, these guests have more choice now, and they want to travel, but they want to know what they're getting in return. And they want to know that they're making the right choice, and they don't want to have buyer's remorse. So there's ways that I've thought of to kind of entice guests to stay with you. The other part of that, right, is we know that GMs really only have two tools to entice guests to stay with them: price point and positioning, right? So your price point on your website, if the GM up the road lowers their rate, we're going to lower ours to try to be competitive. And then website position, you can pay Google Ads, or you can pay TripAdvisor or higher commission, or Expedia or Booking or whatever, a higher commission to rank higher on their page. We also know that these OTAs, they've shortened their pages, right? So you could have had 20 hotels on one page. Well, now they only have 10. You got to go to the next page. Well, we know buying habits is that people aren't going to go to that next page, right? They might have, you know, 700 hotels that show up in their query when you search, but they're only going to show the top 10. And those are the ones paying the highest commission. So there's certainly a compelling way, I think, to try to give more tools to property managers to entice guests to stay with them versus their competitor.
And I think what you mentioned is a huge problem for the masses in terms of the hotel industry. You know, for a lot of us, and I know for a lot of us listening, myself included, you know, for me, my experience being primarily in a top 25 major market in Chicago, you know, where you can entice guests with, you know, obviously there's an array of amenities and offerings and stuff like that. But when you're in, you know, the middle of Oklahoma somewhere and you're off the highway and it's, right, Quality Inn in Hampton or La Quinta and, you know, Comfort Inn and Suites, they're essentially the same product. So those are the pricing and positioning are the only two things that could work for you. Primarily, and I think especially in those markets, which are the bulk of the country's, you know, kind of hotel assets. So yeah, I definitely think that there's certainly an opportunity there. So with that in mind and kind of moving forward, I do want to kind of get into your experience now with ResNexus. So you pitched your idea to James Mayfield, right? And he said, I love it, but not enough to invest in it, but I like you, come and work for me, right? So what was your first impression?
He told me, He basically told me, he's like, you don't know anything about software, do you? And I was like, no. he goes, come work for me. If you want to do your idea in a couple of years, he's like, you still can't, you know?
Well, you know, that's awesome. He giving you an opportunity. It sounds to me like you're learning a lot, right? Just in, you know, going from a strictly hotelier to, you know, search engine optimization specialist and software guy, also a blogger and kind of getting into the social media side as well. You've really diversified yourself a lot. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but your experience seems very keen to entrepreneurship, because it's granted ResNexus seems like it's a decently sized company, but this, what they brought you on for seems entrepreneurial in its own right. Would you agree?
Yeah. And I think a lot of the relationships that we have with our customers is just that they're all entrepreneurs, whether they know it or not. And oftentimes what we see kind of getting into B&Bs is you have somebody who is typically retirement age, but there are a lot of people that are starting B&Bs that are far younger. But you have somebody that's retirement age, they withdraw their 401k or their IRA, and then they say, what's a secure asset that I can then invest this in? Well, real estate, right? And they're like, well, I'm kind of retired, but I'm still able-bodied. I want to still be able to work, but I don't want to go be a Walmart greeter or something like that, right? So they invest in real estate, they buy a larger house than what they need, and then they rent out other rooms. So some of them are renting, like I said, vast majority of them are five rooms or under, and then they might have their own owner's cottage or something like that on the property. So then they can have the lifestyle that they want. They can choose to live in a favorable destination area, right? Like St. Augustine, Florida, or, you know, the Rocky Mountains in Colorado or something like that, where they're going to have more tourism. And then they just build out a website, and that's what ResNexus helps them with. Get a booking engine and kind of help them get off the ground.
That is awesome. And
the little guy.
I was looking a little bit at ResNexus, and one of the things that I found fascinating, and like for somebody like you and me, right, who we use OnQ, and for people who use Opera and Choice Advantage or whatever their property management system is, you're booking a room with a king bed or a room with two queens or a room with a king and a sofa bed, but you don't get to book that room number, right? And that's something that we as hoteliers have had to constantly face, where people want a specific room. Now with prototypical branded select service hotels or whatever, every room is essentially the same, so it doesn't matter, right? But with these five or six room B&Bs, I'm sure every room is a little bit different and unique. So one of the things that I found fascinating was that you can actually book a specific room number essentially on through ResNexus as the guest, kind of going through that, maybe that would be the planning stage, right, or the dreaming stage, I guess, when you're going through that process. And you can kind of see yourself in a particular room that catches your eye. You know, it reminds me a little bit, I don't know if you've seen the show Hotel Impossible on Travel Channel with Anthony Mercury.
I don't think I have, no.
I recommend taking a look at it. Every season is on Amazon Prime, seasons 1 through 9. But this gentleman, Anthony, he goes through to independently owned, struggling hotels and motels throughout the country and helps them get basically on track. And we'll kind of go in as a week-long task force consultant. They do a renovation on every episode. It's really, really cool. But, you know, one of the things you would see time and time again with that show is that every room would be a little bit different in those hotels. And I think that, you know, that's a good way to stand out from your prototypical select service or big box properties, the cookie cutter hotels. Is, yeah, you're a B&B, maybe you don't have a brand to back you and you're not recognizable, but what you do have is a unique experience in every room. You could stay five times and have a completely different experience as a guest each and every one of those times. So I connect with that because I was like, that's I feel like a pain point that ResNexus has solved for those, you know, who are just getting into that. Have you noticed a good response from people with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you hit the nail right on the head. That's one of the probably the most vocal feature that we hear about. People will come back to us and say how much they really enjoy the software because and one way you can go onto the software or you can go to book at a property, and we have a 3-month calendar, so you can select your dates. And then even if the room is occupied, it'll still show up so you can view it and you can see the pictures and the description of it and everything, but it'll show that it's already been reserved. So if you want to come back and stay there, you can see other places that you want to stay in. So one of our properties is the Black Swan up in Idaho, and they have incredible properties. Oh, I think I lost you. Hey.
Man, I'm so sorry. When I say this never happens, I really mean it. This is very rare that this occurs during one of our podcast episodes.
So this is one of our really cool romantic themed rooms, properties up in Idaho. I think it's up in Pocatello. It's called the Black Swan Inn. And they have, you know, Arabian Nights. They have, you know, Atlantis Under the Sea, this cave one, Egyptian themed rooms, rainforest pirate themed rooms. But so if you go to their website, of course, you can see, you know, check availability or book now or something like that. But then our booking engine, this is here, you can see that for the dates that I've selected, the Arabian Nights room is occupied, but it still shows up. So you can still see the description. You can still see the pictures and you can view more pictures. So that way, if you want to come back, you know, maybe, or change your dates, right? And then you can also click on the view 3-month calendar, and it'll show you all the dates that it's not available and all the days that it is available. So if you want that one particular room, it'll show up here and you can actually pick a date that works to book it. So that's what's really unique about their software. They also do a lot of upselling. So if I went through and I booked this one, oftentimes I'll go to check out, and then they'll have these must-see enhancements that you can have as part of your stay package. So you can kind of build your own package. So this particular property, they have a lot of bath bombs. They have a massage table that you can reserve. They have essential oils, or you can get some sparkling cider or something like that that you can then include in that package. So you can kind of build your own package, and then you go to checkout. And one of the best things that we do at time of booking is we will actually collect your birthday and anniversary. So a lot of our customers really enjoy that as well, because we have built-in automatic email marketing. So ResNexus does the booking engine. We can build your website, and we have our own email marketing builder. So you don't have to go to like MailChimp or some of the others. And so right from your booking engine, you can go in and you can automatically, you don't have to touch anything, automatically have a birthday email built. And then when it's the month before a customer's birthday that stayed with you prior, you can remind them that you're there and that you're open, right? We have other marketing campaigns regarding, of course, COVID-19 and things like that. So it's pretty unique. It's really cool. The ResNexus kind of brands itself as the all-in-one solution, and having ResNexus for a small property and we're expanding into larger and larger properties is like having another full-time employee.
It really does feel that way, because especially when you talk about like your 69-year-old Airbnb first-time property owner who worked as a, you know, CPA for his entire life before buying a property, like they don't know anything about this stuff. This would be a hurdle for somebody becoming a lodging operator or something, like without a solution, it would just be maybe unmanageable for some people. So really, I truly believe that these sort of solutions are actually in the macro and in the big picture helping the hotel industry in the long run and helping entrepreneurs to be able to have an opportunity to do something and not have to worry about this other stuff. One of the things that I thought was cool is the upselling thing, because I'm trying to think, This is something that you guys have been doing, but just recently became a feature. I wish I could remember what it was. I had actually implemented it at one of my previous properties, Passkey, which is basically like for special SRPs for conventions or groups. You send them the link so they can reserve directly through that link to get the SRP, and then it would ask you for, you know, hey, do you want an early check-in? You can pay this much. Do you want champagne? You can pay this much. But it was only for those special SRPs, and it was only through this additional program that you had to add in. It wasn't a part of the booking engine specifically. So the fact that you guys have been doing that, it goes a long way for sure.
And that was through Hilton that you implemented that?
It was a Hilton property, yes. To be honest with you, I don't know whether or not it was exclusive to Hilton, or if it's kind of available to all brands. But yeah, that was, and this was in 2019, so kind of a relatively new thing that at least I had come across in my hotel career.
Nice, yeah.
And that's kind of like for your full service convention properties, but again, the it's accomplishes the same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen others, where you, and I think it was through Hilton. I might be misremembering from my time with IHG, but, you could pay extra, the provider, the hotel could pay extra to have this service, and it would, prompt the guests to go through an upgrade, like kind of in their welcome email, like 3 or 4 days before. And so it'd say, hey, guess what? You know, we have some larger rooms available. If you'd like to upgrade, $10. Or if you want to add, you know, chocolates or roses or whatever, you could do that. Or if you wanted to reserve an event space, or even reserve, like, depending on the property, but you could reserve, you know, the fireplace or something like that, or whatever.
There was one of those with Hilton, and maybe perhaps it was with other brands, right? But I'm not exactly sure because my experience has primarily been with Hilton, but Nor One, E Standby. Nor One, yep. And it's crazy because, like, you talk about this, it brings me back because I feel like it's only been a couple months, but I feel like I'm so out of the game already, you know, because when you do it every day, it's like just, it's so ingrained. Now I'm like, I can't even remember the name of the system. I'm having to dig deep for that. And then even beforehand, when I was working for the 6 months or whatever, it was the pandemic and Nor One was turned off and nobody was booking anyway. So definitely reminds me that I'm maybe getting a little rusty over here after not being in the hotel, but I try to keep my chops sharp. Talking to people like you keeps me going.
I think the trend that will continue is that intense value that comes with that unique personalization that comes from inception of booking. Right. So I don't think, yeah, certainly like the experience can be there and you can have that personalized service, maybe at check-in or during your stay. But I think guests are looking for more personalization. So whether it's that Nor One option or what have you, but I think B&Bs have really performed well, or especially campgrounds are performing really well right now because everybody's, you know, this mass exodus that's coming from the cities and people don't have to bring PPE when they go to a campground or anything like that. But I think what I was saying about loyalty is, you know, another tool. People can earn points if they stay at Marriott Rewards or Hilton Reward, Hilton Honors or IHG Rewards or something like that. But I don't think that moves the needle enough, right? So we know that I think I saw a stat that said 50% of even elite members will cheat on their brand of choice, and they'll stay at a Marriott and then they'll stay at a Hilton Honors or something like that, because they're not getting that personalized experience. Because the unique thing for that Diamond Hilton member is that they get the same treatment as every other Diamond Hilton member. So they get their bottle of water and their snack when they check in. I mean, is that really creating that much value? you know, yeah, they get, you know, twice as many points and this and that. And of course they can use that. There's a utility there, right, with those loyalty points that they can then apply and put it on a gift card, an Amazon card, or they can take a free stay or whatever. But the other part of that is we, especially with Bitcoin, you look at loyalty points like a currency, right? And it is, it's an asset, right? It's on their balance sheet. And I don't know if you saw this, I think it was like 3 years ago, United diluted their currency, right? What they did is they took their miles and they said your 100,000 miles is now only worth 50,000 miles, right? So it empowers those brands. Sure, the big brands, they can get away with that. And they have that opportunity. They have these assets, right, that they can manage however they want. But it's the guest that's suffering because of that, right? So I think the trend will be in 2021, 2022, that we're going to go away from these points rewards programs and just give them the experience that they deserve from the get-go, right? You know, make them, give them that 50% off initially, give them that hot towel treatment, that fantastic breakfast. I think people are going to want to pay for that and get rewarded now, right? We know that we live in a now society, and that our generation, the younger generation, they want everything and they want it now. So give me that phenomenal experience every time, right? And don't just make me earn it.
Right. And I think especially now, because the elite members, the diamond members, the Spire members, they know this, that anybody can go out and get a brand, a credit card, and be them without having to stay 50 or 60 nights a year on the road away from their families. For the longest time, it was like a, you know, actually being a diamond member or an elite member was like a, you know, road warrior. Like you put in the work and there was less volume of them. Now that you can go out and get a credit card and spend $3,000 within the first 3 months and get automatic diamond status or whatever, the value is just not the same. And they know this. And then when you get to the property level, you know, and from working at large box Hilton properties in the city, and you're looking at your arrivals list and there's 60 diamond members, 70 diamond members checking in that day, you can really only, you know, the bottle of water is only going to go so far, or, you know, that one tiered upgrade to a room that has a little bit of a larger bathroom is only going to make them feel so much valued. So I think there's definitely merit and validity in your point. Especially with the pandemic too, people aren't going to be able to, their companies maybe won't send them on the road for 60 nights a year anymore. So that people are going to want that immediate sense of return.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was trying to remember, there's this this movie with Anna Kendrick and George Clooney. And George Clooney's character is trying to get to 1 million air miles or something like that, so that he can like get this status. And I think it just came out like 4 or 5 years ago. It's a really good movie.
It's like Up, Up and Away, I think.
Sounds right.
Something like that. Yep. But it was a Hilton. It was actually, they used the Hilton brands, I remember, because he was like,
yeah. Yeah. I saw it.
Like Homewood Inn and Hampton Inn on the podium with the logo on it. Like, right. They were very much using the brand.
But my point is, I think you're right. Like the road warrior is now the Zoom warrior, right? Like that's going to go away, because now you don't have to spend nearly as much on travel expenses or anything like that. Sure. You can't replace face to face. But I think we're going to see less and less in that. And where will hotels land in that? Where will the airlines land in that? You know, I think that's going to be really interesting. And I also think that, again, going back to B&Bs, there is that stay safe, stay small mentality, right? So people are really promoting that right now and saying, come stay at our little 5-bedroom or 10-bedroom B&B or our campground or whatnot, even for corporate travel, right? Because our cleanliness standards are there. We have far less rooms to clean. And, you know, there's less sense of exposure, you know, less risk of exposure. You can certainly get, you know, maybe a higher standard of clean, or maybe they have greater technology with UV lights and, you know, everything else that the major hotel chains might be able to afford. But I think you get that personalized service from these smaller properties. They're going to have that attention to detail that you might not necessarily get from a larger property.
Well, and for the same or less price, you're going to get personalized service. Because, and I think obviously there's still a lot of people who, you know, are not traveling or, you know, or are intimidated to travel right now. But as since March, we've come a long way in the science of what's going on with the coronavirus pandemic. So, you know, we know that it's not so much contracted on surfaces as it is airborne. So to be in the lobby with these UV, can't remember what they're called, but the electrostatic sprayers, it's more, granted it obviously helps and I would love to see it, but it's theatrics as well. It is applicable. So are you willing to pay so much during an economic crisis for the theatrics than you would going to a place where you know that these people are going to, you're the owners of the B&B are going to be cleaning properly and making you feel safe. You get a personalized experience and you don't have these central common places like elevators and lobbies where you really are going to be in contact in the airborne, which we know is obviously the bigger component to, you know, the virus than anything else at this point. So yeah, I definitely think.
And I think it stands to reason, right, that we don't know when we're going to get a vaccine. Like, there certainly talk is cheap, right? Like everybody says, oh yeah, it'll be, you know, maybe by the end of the year or maybe this, but they keep pushing it back. You know, I think properties need to anticipate that this could be that A, we won't get a vaccine to the masses until this time next year, right? It will be readily available until Q2, Q3 of next year of 2021. But then even still, you have the anti-vaxxers, right? You have people that don't trust the government. You have people that don't want to, that are just anti-vaxxers. You have people that are concerned that they rush the vaccine and then, you know, it might make them sick. You know, I don't know if it was fake news or not, but I heard an article, read an article the other day. It was talking about one of the big pharma companies. They were doing testing and someone had spinal issues. So they were testing a vaccine. And they didn't say that this person was paralyzed or anything like that, but there was certainly risks involved and unforeseen consequences that came out of these trials. So they had to stop that particular trial. So, I mean, yeah, it stands to reason that, again, I think that this isn't just a 2020 trend. Will things go back to normal, right? This is the new normal. I think properties have to adapt to that change and understand that there has been this huge disruption and say, you know, yeah, I've been stubborn and I didn't want to believe it until now, but what changes are we going to make in order to survive for the next 24 months, right? Long term, you know, and that's about building trust, right? That's about providing that personalization. Trust is the new loyalty, right? Managing guest expectations of what they can expect when they come to your property, what level of service you're going to provide, what level of personalization are you going to provide, and are they safe? Because I think on top of that, people are your home now is it's where you live, it's where you sleep, it's where you cook, it's where you have you entertain, it's where you work out. You have VR now, right? And everybody you can take a getaway with your virtual reality glasses or whatnot. And so I think people now have to weigh, oh, am I going to go on that trip? When is it worth the hurry up and wait and the airlines and the health risks? And is the experience really, oh, I'll get a bottle of water when I get there. Yeah. I'll do a Zoom call.
if that, another thing too, where, you know, B&Bs and these small properties, I think they, at least right now, do have a certain advantage, at least from an experience standpoint, because you go to, you know, a lot of the branded hotels right now, and you're obviously dealing with the new cleaning protocols, et cetera, but then you go and it's a skeleton crew and, you know, the staff is burnt out because ownership is pushing them to the brink of,
you know, everybody has to do more with less.
You're doing more with less. You have restricted amenities. So your experience itself, if you go there, you're going to be like, you know what, this isn't even, you know, and granted people, I think, are generally understanding that we're in a pandemic, but people are also like, okay, maybe I was more understanding in April. Now I'm starting to be like, okay, at what point is it abundantly clear that as a guest, my experience doesn't matter anymore, because it's blatantly obvious that, you know, the owners of the hotel are scraping by. And obviously I empathize, because this is the worst crisis in recorded history for the hotel industry, and yeah, financially owners are strapped, but the guest doesn't care when they show up to stay. They really don't. So maybe they would decide and just opt to go to a B&B at that point, where they're going to get a little bit of a better experience. So a lot to kind of digest and see where, you know, it all ends up going forward in the next 24 months or so.
I actually just saw you talked about unemployment. I saw that the World Travel and Tourism Council's economic report stated that nearly 174 million jobs could be lost globally if restrictions aren't lifted and rigorous testing isn't put in place. That's just in the hospitality industry. 174 million jobs might not return globally. And we know that travel and tourism makes up 10% of global GDP. I saw another article that was stipulating that they thought that global GDP would be 50 times worse than it was in 2009, right? So it would fall by, I can't remember the percentage, but it's going to be the fallout from this. I think we haven't even seen it yet. I think we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. I don't want to be, you know, the sky is falling and everything, but, you know, honestly, I think people need to prepare for the long term. I think that there's going to be, you know, of course there's going to be government help, right? And I know that there's stimulus packages and things like that that can help, but that those can only go so far. You know, how is the industry going to be reshaped kind of going forward? And I do actually have to wrap up, because I do have another meeting, but I wanted to get an opportunity to talk to you about some other opportunities as well with you. So I really appreciate the time, but maybe we could pick it up maybe next week or something like that too.
Man, I'm happy to chat anytime, because there's definitely a lot to get through. So Nate, before we wrap up, let our listeners know where they can find you specifically, if they want to reach out to you directly, and where they can read and digest some of your very helpful blog posts.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate the plug. Nathan Golic. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. And then I write for ResNexus Suite Exchange. So if they go to resnexus.com and under education, and then Suite Exchange, and my information is also on there, feel free to reach out. I'm also looking for people to interview, kind of like Kyle here. So I'd love to, while Kyle does blog posts and everything, I do some long form articles. I'd love to catch up with some of your listeners and see what expertise they have. Again, when I interview some of our B&Bs, you might not think that you have hospitality experience, but some of our B&B owners, they were had a former life in construction, or maybe they were an executive HR or something like that. And I love catching up with people that have all this depth and breadth of experience in other fields, because that can really apply when you come to entrepreneurship and you come to opening up your own property, right? Because you, again, especially in COVID, you have to do more with less. So there's so many different, as we know, in hospitality, every day is different. Managing staff and working with third-party vendors and marketing and technology and everything. So I love catching up with people, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Nate, thank you so much for your contributions to hospitality. And again, we will be putting Nate's LinkedIn and the ResNexus website and all of his information in the show notes for today's episode to make it easy for everybody listening. So thanks again for tuning in to Hospitality MD, and we will be back again next week with another episode.